Hello there, big boy. Thanks for calling 1-900 Punk News Podcast. Charges $3.95 a minute. So strap in, because we're going to have a great ride tonight on the podcast for the week of April 10, 2013. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. We got tons of stuff to talk about tonight. We're going to be talking about Margaret Thatcher dying. We're going to be talking about Chumbawamba. We're going to talk about John Lydon being a jerk on the radio or on the TV. If you think he was a jerk, or was he just being John Lydon? We're probably going to talk about Brian Fallon's, his new solo album, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And with me on the Punk News Podcast tonight, making his return after a long, glorious absence, is Greg Simpson. Greg, how you doing?
Howdy, y'all.
Greg, you know, you were just on the front page of the newspaper for your music teaching. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, in Bloomington, Indiana, it's a real big publication. I guess I was part of an assembly we had. I had two things. I was on the paper playing my acoustic guitar along with some second graders and first graders doing What a Wonderful World. And then I also was part of a flash mob where I did this whole rap about reading elementary school books. And it was to the tune of, I don't know if anyone else outside of Indiana would know this, a pretty big Hoosier song that came out a few years ago called This Is Indiana. We changed it to This Is How We Read. So it was a cool little kind of, I guess you'd call it parody, something
Greg,
like that.
Greg, yeah. is your teaching profession like Sister Act or like Mr. Holland's Opus? Where you teach a bunch of disadvantaged youths to like learn the joy of music and how to succeed in life through the joy of music? Is that what you do?
That is what I try to do. But as far as the disadvantaged youths, I guess my old job could have been described kind of as that. But my current job I've had for the past couple of years is a bunch of like professors' kids here at Indiana University.
Better question: are you using your music career as a way to hide out from the mob?
I'm not at liberty to divulge that information.
Fair enough. And back with me is our glorious West Coast golden boy, Armando Olivas. Armando, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Went to a comic book shop, did some stuff. I'm feeling fantastic.
Armando, are you still slanging them stacks at the comic book shop? Are you still working there?
Sort of. I'm like in this weird in-between phase when it comes to comic books and actually selling them.
Now, Armando, are the stereotypes about comic book dudes true?
To an extent, I feel that there are people who actually do, you know, fit in that stereotype. But to say that everyone is like that or that's a majority, nah. It's more of like a very vocal minority.
Have you ever seen any famous people come into your shop?
No.
Will Wheaton?
Yes, has Will Wheaton ever come in? Wesley Crusher from Star Trek The Next Generation.
No, Will Wheaton has never come into my shop, given that we're like 40 minutes from L.A.
Who's the creepiest dude you've ever seen come into the shop? I mean, not his name, but I mean, can you describe him?
There was this really creepy guy who would come in with his daughter all the time. And one of like he would always pick up like all those sketchy, smutty books, you know, like the stuff you know you're buying just like for cheesecake value.
I'll tell you, I'll never forget talking about creepy dudes with like their daughters. Is I go to a lot of record conventions, and I'm not gonna say he specializes in a genre. I'm not gonna say what genre because it'll identify him. I mean, it's like not a weird genre. It's like disco, but it's not disco, you know. And like this dude, like he's really into this genre, and so am I. So I'm talking about these records, and then like every like fifth set, like his daughter's there with him. His daughter's like 12, maybe 10. He would go off on how he like smoked weed with all these artists, and also how he like banged chicks with these artists. And I didn't say anything, but I've like felt really awkward. I'm like, dude, your like 10-year-old daughter's right there. You should be talking about how you used to bang chicks in the 80s or whatever. You know, it's like, what's wrong with you, dude? Like, what's wrong with these dudes and their daughters? Like, for real.
I know. Well, at least in this case, it wasn't as bad as that because his daughter was probably like 19 or 20. And probably just like, oh, my dad reads.
That's
like,
kind of even creepier if you're like a 19-year-old girl going to the comic shop with your dad and he's buying like dirty comic books. Like you can't even man up and get like Playboy or something.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, like, they weren't like dirty so much as it's like it was pretty much like the typical woman in bikini like comics. But yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. Anyway, well, last question about comic books is, Armando, do you read Hellblazer?
No, I don't.
Oh, because they just like finished it with issue 300, and I thought yeah, it was
they just ended it, and then because that's the one of John Constantine, right?
Right, right.
Or well, because now Constantine has his own new book under DC as opposed to Vertigo, and so I actually want to check that out.
Yeah, but he's like a superhero now, and that's not why I read it. It used to be more like kind of like an X-Files, but with like devil stuff, you know?
I mean, I wouldn't call him a superhero, but they've made him less of an ordinary man than he originally was. I'll give you that.
And with us tonight also, running the decks is Sound Guy Nerman, who never lets us down and is the recording master. Sound Guy Nerman, let us be aware of your presence. Okay, and I think that was it.
I was hoping there'd be some sort of robot sound.
Well, you know, Nerman's not even actually a person. He's actually a collection of like a whole bunch of different like computer programs and hardware tied together, and we don't even know who put it together. It's just like this machine. It's kind of
Ultron
like
did.
Yeah, like Ultron. Exactly.
Yes.
So before we start actually talking about today's news stories, we're going to play a track first from a band called Infectious Garage Disease. Infectious Garage Disease is not a well-known band. They were around from the late 80s to early 90s. They were one of the, I guess, earliest crossover thrash bands following bands like DRI. They're kind of like Vitamin X. They're heavy metal, but they're punk. They're fast, wild, and wacky. I like them a whole lot. They're kind of like an earlier version, I guess, of Municipal Waste. Style-wise, if you like that kind of music, they've got a reissue out of their brand new album, well, their only album, called Infectious Garage Disease. This is the opening track, and it is called Milwaukee's Best. Check it out. So anyways, I guess we'll start off tonight's podcast with some pretty heavy topics. Depending on how you look at it, Margaret Thatcher this week just passed away. Margaret Thatcher, as a lot of people know, was Prime Minister of England for a long time. Some people see her as like an important person in women's rights and a person that, I guess, brought a economic stability back to England. But other people saw her as someone that engaged in like needless wars and as someone that did a lot of harm to social programs in England. A lot of artists had stuff to say about her. And so here's what some of the artists had to say about Margaret Thatcher. Morrissey, who a lot of people have mixed feelings about, I think he's a great artist. I think maybe he's not so great a person. Here's what Morrissey said. Every move she made was charged by negativity. She destroyed the British manufacturing industry. She hated the miners. She hated the arts. She hated the Irish freedom fighters and allowed them to die. And then he said, Thatcher was a terror without an atom of humanity. Jerry Dammers of The Specials, here's what he said. Ghost Town was our political reflection on the situation in the 1980s, which wasn't good, and Thatcher's own policies had helped create. I'm proud to have put out songs opposed to her, and she changed our country for the worse. Britain is no longer self-sufficient, and we don't pay our way in the world anymore. I think the most damning quote came from Chumbawamba, who in 2005 recorded an entire EP that they said they would only release after Margaret Thatcher died. Well, when she died, they finally released the EP and made it available online. But Chumbawamba they smashed her up pretty bad in their quote. Here's what Chumbawamba said. Let's make it clear. This is a cause to celebrate, to party, to jump the dirt down. Tomorrow we can carry on shouting and writing and working and singing and striking against the successive governments that have so clearly followed Thatcher's slash-and-burn policies, none more so than the present lot. But for now, we can have a drink and dance and propose a toast to the demise of someone who blighted so many people's lives for so long. If we must show a little reverence and decorum at the time, then so be it. Our deepest sympathies go out to the families of Margaret Thatcher's victims. Greg, what do you think, man? is it in poor taste to like dance on a dead woman's body, or did she get what she had coming?
Well, my wife and I were actually just talking about this, that it seems in a little poor taste maybe to go that far, and we were listening to the EP. Like, even when, say, you know, for Americans, maybe, you know, Osama bin Laden, obviously a big, big nemesis of whatever, our freedom. And when we found him and killed him, you know, there are people like out in the streets, woo, we killed him. But like, even that, even someone as horrible as him, it's like, I'm not going to go around hooting and hollering over anyone's death, really, even though it's like, okay, that probably is a good thing for as far as, you know, the world's well-being is concerned, but it still seems a little in poor taste. So like for them to celebrate someone's death, to me, that's going a little bit far. I mean, going against her policies is one thing, but at her actual like human self, I don't know. Am I making any sense here?
No, actually, I agree with you entirely. There are very few people whose death I would celebrate. I do think it's in poor taste. Even with like Osama bin Laden, I don't know if I would celebrate his death or not. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. I mean, he's dead. I realize he's dead. But what I would say is I find it sad that anybody would have to get to that point where they would have to be that evil. With Margaret Thatcher, I think it's much more of a gray space because I don't know a ton about English politics, but I don't think Margaret Thatcher had an evil intent. You know, I think she thought she was doing what's best.
Right.
She did cause the death of a lot of people in the Falkland Wars. But you know what? So is every single president ever and every single prime minister ever since George Washington. And you know, prime ministers are – actually, prime ministers come after presidents. But I mean kings. Like there hasn't been a world leader in 5,000 years that hasn't caused the death of a whole lot of people. So right. Are we to celebrate the death of every single one of them? Seems like a slippery slope to me. I was going to buy the Chumbawamba EP, but I didn't because honestly I felt it was bad mojo to like buy in on somebody's death. I was scared of like putting a curse on myself. So I was glad they put it out for free afterwards because I was scared I would never get to hear it. So.
Right. The other thing that my wife brought up was like, okay, you pre-order this, you know, 7 years before, 8 years before, and like, oh, sure, I'm sure none of those people's home addresses have changed.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can even order it up to like last week.
Yeah, okay, all right. But I do like, as much as I think it's kind of in poor taste, I really like that first song, the whole, I don't know what you'd even call that genre, but it's got a kind of an old-timey feel to it. And like the horns and the harmonies and stuff, I really dig the tune of that the first song, whatever it's called.
Would you classify it as ragtime?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah. Okay. But it doesn't have Ragtime signature instrument is piano, though. There's not any piano in there, is it?
No one cares, Whoopi.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's like, hello, my baby. Hello, my darling. hello, my ragtime.
There's no piano. Yeah, okay. No, it is along those lines, sure. Yeah.
I mean, the deluxe version, once Margaret Thatcher's zombie arrives, will have piano.
I'll do a remix of it.
Just like R. Kelly's remix of Ignition. It'll be like the jam of the century.
It's not on the list, but can we talk about the damn remix for One Armed Scissor?
Yeah, I don't even know what that is, but sure, why not?
So wait, someone actually remixed that?
You guys do read the site that we work for, right?
I don't get
what site? We work for a site?
I thought we were just talking here.
That's what I thought. I thought we just called each other each week to bullshit. I had no idea what's going on.
This was just yesterday, I think. Some Swedish somebody remixed One Arm Scissor for, I don't know if they're doing a reissue. Hold on, I'm trying to find it. But the damn remix contains no elements of the original whatsoever. Nothing. It's just like a beat and like some bleeps and bloops. There's no actual samples, for one thing, which I understand doesn't necessarily need to have samples, but there's no like melodic tidbits. There's really no melody to speak of. To me, nothing ties it to the original, and I just thought it seemed like that's not even really a remix.
If there's no actual elements from the original song, how could you classify it as a remix?
Beats the hell out of me.
At the drive in the field remix. I remember in the
yes.
I'm a huge Rolling Stones fan. And in the 90s, some marketing genius got the
idea. The 90s.
Hey, remember the 90s?
Some marketing genius got the idea to like introduce the Stones to like dance clubs when like techno and EDM was getting really popular. So there's all these Rolling Stones dance remixes, and they're so terrible. I mean, I'm a huge Stones fan. I guess all they are like a generic like club beat, and then like one sample of like a Mick Jagger refrain put on top of it, and it is so bad, so bad.
Yeah, this isn't even that. Like, if you had, you know, at least them say "One Arm Scissor" on top of it, that would be like, okay, it's a remix of One Arm Scissor. But there's nothing in there, and it's 9 goddamn minutes. And I listened to the whole thing. I'm like, it's got to be building to something, and it just never happened.
Yeah. Speaking of all this, it reminds me of when Against Me put out the dance remix for Stop.
I don't think I ever heard that.
You've never heard it?
The remix, no.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, Stop, but. I mean, it's like all dancing and clubby. It's like Stop, take some time to think. You know, I don't know.
The original's kind of dancey to start with, though.
It's got like keys and like you could like torque to this.
Sure. I'll have to check that out.
Can I pop and lock to it?
Yeah, you could.
I know Against Me got remixed by Mike D or Ad Rock of the Beastie Boys on From Her Lips to God's Ears. And I never checked it out, but I've always been meaning to check that out.
Oh, that seems like it might be
terrible.
Worth a couple minutes. Well, I don't know. Might be worth at least checking out.
Yeah.
Dancepunknews.org.
Listen, you got to move with the future, boys. Punk rock is dead. Dubstep and EDM is the future. If Pitchfork has told me anything, it's that people want EDM.
Everybody wants EDM.
Actually, I got a funny story real quick. Is on Halloween, a whole bunch of my friends were going to a all-night dance club in San Francisco. And EDM is electronic dance music, if people don't know. It's basically techno. And on Halloween, a bunch of my friends were going to an all-night dance party for Halloween. And I didn't really want to go, but the crew was gone. So I said, I'll go. And so we didn't even leave till like 11:30. And I'm thinking to myself, man, clubs close at 2 o'clock. This is going to be great. We'll get there at 12. I'll be there till 2, and then I'll bail, right? We get there. Guess when the thing goes till?
5 a.m.?
6 a.m.
Nice.
I was bombarded with dubstep for literally like 6.5 hours.
And you didn't kill yourself?
No, actually, it really wasn't that terrible because, I mean, like, there's this one guy called, like, Otto Van Schreck or whatever. And, like, that's his name. He's, like, some guy from, like, Brazil or something. And like, it's kind of like Guar in that it's, like, when you hear, like, you don't go to listen to the music. I mean, at a dance club, does the music even really matter? You're just there for like the beat, you know?
Sure.
But this guy called like Otto Van Schreck or something comes out, and and it's kind of like Gwar, and he's got like all these monsters on stage with him, like crocodiles and tuxedos and like Swamp Thing type things. And it's, nice. It's like really neat to watch. It's like watching a Gwar performance or something.
I bet you loved that.
I didn't love it, but it made it bearable.
It made it bearable because it had elements of Gwar-esque stuff.
Exactly, exactly.
Were any liquids spilled on the crowd?
Liquid? Oh, like a foam party? Nah, but
I meant you, like blood or semen.
Nah, nothing like that. But I will tell you this: is I don't do drugs at all. But San Francisco is notorious for like party drugs and stuff. And I'm thinking, man, I hope I don't get myself into like over my head. Like I don't want to get caught in a bad scene or whatever. So I went to like this club was like you know one of the party drug clubs. And like I said, I think the whole thing is blown out of proportion. Like, apparently people were doing ecstasy and stuff. But I couldn't even tell. It just seemed like a regular dance club to me, you know?
Huh. Yeah, I'm oblivious to all that kind of stuff, too.
I mean, like, I've seen, like, a fair share of raves going on out in my area, but I've never gone to one. But I've always felt like I would have an interesting experience if I ever went to one.
I recommend it just to, like, say you've done it once, you know?
What happens if I come back and I will only enjoy wearing booty shorts and candy at all times?
Then like you and I are going to start ravenews.org. That's what's going to happen.
It'll be the hot new website for sure.
Buzz Media is going to scoop that right up.
Millions
of pennies. Yeah, we've been talking a lot about the future, though. Let's talk about the past. And by past, I mean ska music.
Nice segue.
So tell me, Armando, what's happening in the ska world?
Well, there's two actual big things happening in the ska world. I'll actually talk about the one that's on the website first, and then I'll talk a little bit about the one that will be on the website soon after. The first of which is the guys from Community – or not Community, Asbestos Records. I think they're the guys that put on the block party out in New Orleans – or whatever, have decided to plan the ska festival that New York so direly needs, and they're calling it the Apple Stomp. It's taking place at the end of next month, beginning of June. It's May 31st to June 1st, and it's got a lot of I want to say quintessential ska acts, including but not limited to Suicide Machines, The Slackers, Westbound Train, Mephiscopheles, or Mephiscopheles.
Mephiscopheles.
Yeah.
Yeah, however you pronounce it. All I know is they did the Bumblebee Tuna song, which is a fun song.
Yes.
You know the song. And so yes. I think it looks nuts. Like if I had the money, I would so fly out there. Especially because they haven't even announced the whole lineup yet.
Do you know anything about this band called What's Your Problem, Brian?
No.
That's no, a great
but,
name.
But apparently it's a reunion show for them.
And Brian is pissed.
Brian is very mad.
So Armando, I'm not going to ask you to defend ska. I'm not a huge – well, I like some bands that are ska. I like Mephiscopheles. I like Leftover Crack and Choking Victim.
Blue Meanies.
What's that?
Blue Meanies.
Oh, Blue Meanies. Yeah, that's an Asian man band, right?
It's still a ska band.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying they're one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
What place does ska serve in 2013?
I feel like it's kind of a nostalgic placeholder for most people because you don't really see that much of an active touring ska scene these days outside of like all the old relics kind of playing the same sets. And so it's kind of a bummer to see it in that state. But as far as like local scenes, I feel like depending on where you go, there's like a bunch of like small local bands, like in California and New York and Jersey and Boston areas that do like, you know, their own thing. And it's really rad. But as far as them ever getting big enough to tour, it just doesn't happen.
A few years ago when I was on tour with one of my old bands, we stopped in Cincinnati and ended up on a ska show that had three ska bands and us. And I guess, I don't know, Joe called us Orgcore, but we were with all these other ska bands, and it was pretty wacky.
What was the name of your band?
Take Manhattan.
Oh, okay.
Well, what bands did you end up playing with? Were they all just locals?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, so Cincinnati, like, out of, you know, anywhere, I would never have guessed had this, you know, burgeoning little ska thing going on. But it was kind of fun. It was kind of fun. It took me back.
Cincinnati is the ska capital of America, clearly.
There you go.
Do you guys think that there's room for innovation within the ska genre?
Sure.
We could have more horns.
More horns.
I personally... Armando, do you like the Hippos? Did you like the Hippos?
Yes, I like the Hippos.
Fucking those last two albums they put out, Heads Will Roll, or is it Heads Are Gonna Roll?
Heads Are Gonna Roll.
Heads Are Gonna Roll. I fucking loved that album because I was still loving ska at the time, but I was also really getting into like Moogs and synthesizer stuff, and there's ton of synths on there.
Yeah, is it pronounced Moog or Moog?
It's Moog. It's Moog. No, dude, it's Moog. I am huge into analog synthesizers, and it's a guy's name. It's Robert Moog, and even though it looks like phonetically you would say Moog, it is Moog. That's why there's a Moog Rogue. There's a model of Moog called the Rogue, because it rhymes with Moog.
Okay, yeah.
There you go.
He knows what he's talking about.
It's the Moog Rouge.
It's the Moulin Rouge. No, it's Moog. I thought it was Moog for the longest time, and I was crushed when I found out it was Moog, but it is.
I feel like you've shattered my entire life by telling me this. Like, I don't know how to react anymore.
Sorry.
Is Murphy's Law a ska band?
Kind of. They have a sax.
Aren't they from New York?
They are.
I thought they were like an agnostic front kind of band.
Imagine if Agnostic Front had like a sax player and some ska like riffs here and there.
I gotta check this out now.
I think it might be up your alley, JG.
It might be.
Yeah, I'm totally off air. I'm gonna direct you, Armando, to my old band that we were a 7-piece. I think you would dig.
What was the name of the band?
Blue Bottle. Bluebottle.bandcamp.com. I might as well say it now. We got two albums for free up there.
What else is happening in the ska world?
Oh, the other big event in the ska world is that recently the band Save Ferris announced that they were having a quote-unquote reunion show to take place during the Orange County Fair in their big amphitheater, which everyone was excited for until it was revealed by the rest of the members of Save Ferris that it's not a reunion. It is just Monique Powell and a bunch of, like, scabs.
Ringers,
you know, like a backup band.
Is she the singer?
Yeah, she's the singer.
Okay.
So it's not really a reunion, and the other members have even gone on to state, like, on Facebook, hey, we're totally down for a reunion, would love to make it happen, but no one has approached us or what have you, or things haven't been worked out. And so we want our fans to know, hey, this isn't an actual reunion show. I mean, if you still want to see these songs being played live, you know, we'll hold it against you. Just know what you're paying for isn't a reunion.
So do you think there's dissent within the Save Ferris ranks?
Yeah, I feel like this could divide the Orange County ska scene.
Do you think
how does that work with Wright? I mean, the Wright wise, as far as the songs go, I mean, does she really have that much ownership over the songs that just like 1/5 of the band? I don't know how many people are in St. Ferris.
Here's how it works. If you write a song, you can do whatever you want with it. You can perform it live wherever you want. However, let's say you want to go to a venue and play songs that you didn't write or you don't own all the rights to. That I'm talking about the song composition itself. Most venues have what's called a licensing agreement with either ASCAP, BMI, all those guys, and they basically play a blanket license. That means anybody can play any song they want. What BMI does, or ASCAP, is that they take the annual fee and they do basically a survey of who plays what songs, and they portion it out roughly to what songs were played. What that means is people that are real famous, like Bruce Springsteen, will get way more money, and the Save Ferris people probably won't get any money at all.
Yeah.
Huh.
Interestingly enough, the lead singer actually works for ASCAP.
I think it's a conspiracy. It's all coming together now.
It's a conspiracy. I don't know how I could fit ska in there. A conspiracy.
I guess more is what I was asking is that is her name the sole name under that? You know, she wrote these songs. I guess it must have been, you know, listed as that in their credits or whatever in the albums, she wrote the songs and not, it wasn't any sort of collaborative effort.
She wouldn't need that to perform them live, though.
No?
No, that's what I'm talking about.
Because it could be like a cover. Okay, basically.
Yeah, you can play any song you want live to a public audience so long as the venue pays the licensing fee.
Yes. And I have been told at venues not to play covers before and done them secretly anyway.
Oh, really? But
if, when it's like a Weekend Ends cover, nobody knows.
That's probably because they don't have any agreement with what it is.
Yeah. Right.
See, I didn't know that last part about, you know, like having to pay, like the venue having to pay for like covers or what have you.
Yeah, yeah. They have to pay like a fee so that people can perform songs composed by other people. That's the way it works.
And even longer ago, that band I just gave the link to, actually, we were doing a cover of Say It Ain't So, complete with horns, and had the dude...
Sky It Ain't So?
Kind of. Had the dude run down and like yell at us to stop in the middle of the song, which he didn't tell us before that we couldn't play covers, that he doesn't pay these whatever, you know, royalty things, and made us stop mid-song.
Well, now to get into the more legal side of this whole thing, technically, if a venue doesn't know that a song is a cover and they don't report it, could they get in trouble for that down the like line if someone asked Cap War to figure out that said song was a cover?
Short answer, yes, and here's why. It's because copyright infringement is a strict liability offense. Mean like for example, murder is not strict liability. To be charged with murder, well, I'm mixing them up, but murder is criminal. Copyright infringement is civil. But like to murder somebody, you have to mean you murder somebody or you have to intend to do them bodily harm. But with copyright infringement, let's say I play a song and I think the song is public domain, but it's not, I can get sued for copyright infringement. The way it makes a difference is the amount of damages you can get. If it's unintentional, the damages are less than if it's intentional copyright infringement.
Okay.
Well, that makes sense. So now I know why the venue where we snuck in the Weaker Than's cover is now closed down.
Yeah. Well, actually, like ASCAP and BMI, they do send in spies to like check that stuff out.
Huh.
So, yeah. Anyways, in completely unrelated news, this is quite interesting. Manchester, England police are now defining attacks against punks, goths as hate crimes, which I guess would be similar to hate crimes as we have in the U.S. against people of a certain gender, sexual orientation, or race. According to the Huffington Post, the move was partly the result of a campaign by Sylvia Lancaster, whose daughter was kicked to death in Bowcup, Lancashire, in 2007 because she was dressed like a goth. I think this is the first instance of worldwide where we've had specific laws, hate crimes, in order to protect punks and goths. Although, if you remember, I think it was last year, 2 years ago, in Mexico, goths were getting attacked by gangs and stuff.
No, it was Los Emos, the Emos.
The Emos, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember reading about that, especially because it was all over the Mexican news, and me being Mexican, like, my mom would ask me, you know, like, what's going on with this? Because the whole thing was, eran Los Emos en contra de los ponquetos. So it was like the Emos versus the punks.
Armando, can you do the whole podcast in Spanish from now on? It makes it sound so much classier.
He's like, ahora en el podcast de Punk News tenemos
John Gentle.
Es un golazo en tu iPod.
So anyway, yes, Emos are getting kicked
maybe next time.
Again.
Maybe the Cinco de Mayo podcast.
Oh, this is going to happen.
Hello?
Yeah, huh?
What?
Hello?
Yeah, we're here. Are you here, Armando?
His Spanish just broke the podcast.
Yeah, all right, well, let me give you one. That's what happens. Skype is racist. Skype is not like Spanish people. Oh, yo, Armando, hold on a second. I'm going to add you to the thing. Greg, are you still there?
I am.
This is a disaster. I got to add Armando back. So you keep talking to keep the people interested while I get Armando back on the thing.
Okay, so the Manchester police. All right, so I guess the thing that I wonder about is with hate crimes, it's much easier to define if someone is, for example, black, but or a woman. But it's a lot harder to define if someone is a punk. Like, you know, I mean, you've got the stereotypical image of a punk with a green mohawk and a leather jacket with spikes. But like, how do you
and on fire?
Yeah. What?
I said, oh, and on fire.
Yes, and on fire. but, like, these things, punks, goths, emos, it's a much harder thing to define. So, like, even if they were attacked as a punk, like, how do the lawyers define what a punk is to determine whether these hate crime, these higher crimes would be
short answer, it probably doesn't out. Matter. You have to look at the legislation, but it probably says if the person intended to beat the person up because they were a punk. Here in the States, like for sexual orientation hate crimes, it doesn't actually matter if the person was gay or trans or what, is if the person beating them up thought they were gay or trans and was beating them up because they were gay, thought they were gay or trans.
Okay, yeah.
I feel like I learned something new every punk news podcast from John. So thank you, John.
For sure.
Well, I try. I try to be like, now that I'm getting to be an old man, I try to be like the grandfatherly presence. Like, I sit here, you know, with my pipe, and I'll be like, sit down, young boys. And I, well, that sounds perverted. Sit down, young gentlemen. And I will tell you.
Do you have your smoking blazer on as you sit in your armchair?
Yes, I do.
Is it velvet or velour? Hopefully velour.
It's velour, but actually check this out. I actually had to go buy a Playboy literally for the articles, and I felt like such a creeper.
You're such a liar.
Like, no, I really did. I needed the editorial page, and so I didn't even know where to get one. So I went to like Walden Books, and you have to like ask for it from the person. And I thought, I'm like, can I have a Playboy, please? And she asked me, well, what issue do you want? And I said, just give me the latest one.
I'll have the latest pornography book, please.
Do you sell pornography?
I'm up on my Playboys. I need the latest one.
All right. So anyway, as everybody knows, I'm a Melvins maniac. I'm a huge Melvins fan. They're putting out a new covers album next month, or actually the end of this month, called Everybody Loves Sausages. I've heard it. It's phenomenal. It's got them covering David Bowie with Jello Biafra. It blew my mind. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, they cover Roxy Music with Jello Biafra. It blew my mind. They cover David Bowie's Station to Station. It blew my mind. It's honestly probably the best covers album I've ever heard. So, I mean, I usually don't even like covers albums, but this Melvin one is awesome. So I'll send this out to you two guys. We can either listen to the Melvins cover Queen, we can listen to the Melvins cover Venom, or we can listen to the Melvins cover Tales of Terror. What do you guys want to hear?
Queen.
Venom.
Queen.
Venom.
All right, let's just do them both then. We'll do Queen first, and we'll do Venom at the end of the podcast. This first track is the Melvins covering Queen, the song Best Friend off, what's the album? A Night at the Opera. We'll be right back.
Best
And we are back on the Punk News Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the Melvins. We're going to be playing the Melvins again later on. We're going to have a song from Armando later on. You'll get your fair share of jams. I got to say, fellas, a lot of people are into this band that we're about to talk about. I really just don't get it at all. Maybe you guys are down. And some pretty punk rock guys are into this band. But the band Paramore had released a new video, and they just released a new album on Tuesday, which would be the 9th. Of April. Do you guys dig Paramore? What's the deal with this band? Why are all the punk rock people into it? What's going on? Why don't I understand what's going on? I'm so confused.
Punk rock people are into Paramore?
Yeah.
That's news to me, man.
Like, who notably are you speaking of, John?
A lot of punk news editors are waiting at Paramore.
Like who?
Yeah, Justin, right? Yeah. Justin August?
Justin August is waiting Paramore.
But he loves Brian Katy Perry.
Yancey. Brian Yancey, I think, is. And I think Brian Schultz is, too.
Really? Aubin's a huge Paramore fan. Yeah, Adam White.
Like, everybody loves Paramore except for, like, us three.
We're too busy in the past listening to ska and the Melvins.
we're listening to Chumbawamba, ska and the Melvins.
But, dude, they just buy Paramore albums for the editorials.
What? I don't get that.
Said, what's the singer's name? Haley?
Haley Williams.
I'm just saying people just like the band because she's hot, right? I don't know, isn't that the thing?
Well, honestly, like we would get flack for that, but the fact of the matter is you're partially correct, and I'm not saying that's not the only reason people like the band. I don't think they're personally talented, but maybe they do make good music. But I really think this needs to be pointed out, and people will say hate on this, but especially major labels, but even small labels too, is bands that are good-looking, I think, probably tend to do better than bands that are not good-looking. Look at the Melvins. They're one of the most influential bands ever, but they're not good-looking dudes, and they're not famous. By contrast, say, like Nirvana, who are good-looking dudes, they're wildly popular. Am I right or am I right?
I don't think they were that good-looking.
Who, Nirvana?
Yeah.
Well, not after...
after 1990. Shut up.
But I mean, like, let's look at all the famous bands right now. Beyonce, she's real good looking, right?
Nicki Beyonce, Minaj. Beyonce is a band.
Well, artist. Adele is so.
You know what? Let's not get ourselves in trouble by running down that hot or not list.
Well, no. Here's the thing. Adele isn't conventionally attractive in the sense that she's not like some tiny thing or whatever. Or, you know, but I think Adele is hot. You know, like if Adele wanted to take me out on a date with her millions, I'd be down.
So Adele, if you are listening, all you got to do is ring up Armando and you two have a night on the town. Armando, where would you take Adele? What would you do with her? Would you do like the normal like dinner and movie date, or would you do something quirky like roller skating?
I don't know. I feel like if I were to take Adele out on a date – I feel like first I would want to take her somewhere where we could actually discuss things. So maybe like a bookstore.
Comic book shop.
Well, it could be a comic book shop, but I feel like I don't know if she'd be into comics. So I would make it like a bookstore that carries graphic novels. That way I could kind of, you know, talk about literature, but then weasel in comic book talk on this, in that same date, event.
Armando, let's be real. You take out a fair amount of girls on dates. You don't have problems getting dates, right?
I haven't been on a date in close to a year.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. You always got a lot of pretty girls on your Facebook, like saying, "Oh, Armando, come to this show." I think he's playing coy. What I want to know is, Armando, like if I took a girl on a date to a bookshop, I would have no idea what to do. What do I do with a girl at a bookshop?
Well, first you say, you know, is there any recent book that's come out that you're interested in? Maybe let's check it out.
Read it together.
Well, not necessarily read it together, but like pick it up and maybe read the pitch on the back, because the pitch on the back usually is a pretty good seller. It lets me know if the book is worth buying or not, or at the very least, like checking out a library.
So you do judge a book by its cover.
To an extent. I mean, that's what the back cover is for.
Yeah.
Greg, if you took a Adele out on a date, where would you take her?
I'm married, dude. I'm not even allowed to hypothetically say these things.
Plus, I'm pretty sure if your wife knew that Adele was taking you out, she wouldn't object because it's Adele.
I think you'd go like jazz club, right?
Jazz club?
Man, like, sure, with the swinging cats.
Have you ever been to a real jazz club? Like,
no, he's only been to fake jazz clubs.
Like, honestly, like if I say to a girl, "I'm going to take you to a jazz club, baby," she'll be like, "This guy's the biggest tool in the world." You know
what? Like, I'm gonna help help my boy out. But there's this really cool like jazz lounge and like bar near my house called the Hip Kitty, where they do play a lot of jazz, and it's like a very vibrant spot for like a lot of younger people. I think probably because it's really close to a college, but it's actually a fun atmosphere. And the tool to, you know, like rad dude ratio is in favor of rad dudes.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's just like any other genre. Like, if you really knew your fucking underground jazz, whatever, the hot shit.
Underground, you know, jazz.
Right. Dude, any genre has, you know, the people flying under the radar that are really good but no one knows about. If you knew where to go, I'm sure Adele would be impressed.
Maybe that's my problem. I'm not taking girls to bookstores and jazz clubs. It's like Adele, listen, here's what I got planned. I got a great evening planned for you. First, we're going to go to Walden Books. We're going to read the back of a book. And then I'm going to take you to this underground jazz club that I know. It's going to be some swinging music. I'll get you a highball.
And then you got to take her out to the nicest burger shop in town.
You would take Adele to a burger shop?
In-N-Out.
Oh, no. There's this really cool place near my house called Eureka Burgers that actually does like some very, I want to say, some hoity-toity like fancy shit. Like Adele would be down.
Yeah, actually, you know what? What's your guys' opinion? San Francisco's got a lot of. What's your opinion of a $15 hamburger?
If it's gonna be $15, like it's got to be like the best burger you're gonna eat.
But you know, like let's say it's phenomenal. That's not against the hamburger code if it's really good.
Yeah, if it's a great tasting quality like burger, then who cares if it's $15? Now, you know, like if it's a mediocre burger and doesn't deserve to be $15, then we got a problem.
Greg, what's your opinion of the $15 burger?
I'd pay $15 for a burger, but the burgers I tend to like are at greasy little hole in the wall places where it's just some like smash down slider or some sort of greasy shit where you're paying, you know, $3.50 for it or something. That's what I prefer.
I'm classy like that. I ain't gonna take Adele to like friggin' White Castle.
No, White Castle.
You blew your day with Adele, Greg. You blew it.
I didn't think I was still talking about that. I'm just talking about the burgers I prefer.
We're talking about both Adele and quality burgers. A quality woman deserves a quality burger.
Fuddruckers. Isn't that their slogan? Do you guys have Fuddruckers?
Yeah, there's a place named Fuddruckers. That is like the worst name for a restaurant ever.
Fuddruckers.
No, like Fuddruckers is a pretty horrible name, but it looks nice. There's actually one close to where I work.
You basically have to make your own burger. That's the idea behind it. You have to do the work. You put on all your own shit. Oh, boy. What were we talking about, Margaret Thatcher?
We're talking about John Lydon. Speaking of women poorly, John Lydon recently got himself into a little bit of a ram jam. The first part of the story is that Pill, which is John Lydon's band after the Sex Pistols broke up, are reissuing Pill, Public Image Limited's first album, which was a pretty important album when it comes to post-punk, and was actually really influential, even though not a whole lot of people really know about Pill these days, especially the debut album. But also, John Lydon was recently on a talk show in Australia, and he kind of got in an argument with the people on the talk show itself. It seemed like that his earpiece was way too loud, no one's clear exactly what happened, but I highly recommend people watch the video on Punk News. But while he was on the video, he said to the lady on the program, "Hey, hey, hey, Mrs. Shut Up, whoever you are, shut up, shut up, shut up. Now listen, when a man is talking, do not interrupt. Stop it, you sound like one of them dreadful loud birds I don't like. You be polite, you've got to learn more respect and manners." So was John Lydon like being a real misogynist? Was he just frustrated? Like, what happened here?
I feel it's a little bit of both, because even if you're frustrated, you still, like, you don't say, you know, you don't interrupt a man when he's talking unless you're just a straight-up, like, tool, misogynist, like, douchebag, you know? Because he could be like, hey, yeah, because he could have easily said, hey, 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 you don't interrupt Mr. Lydon when he's talking, and that just means he's an egotistical tool.
But was he using the word a man in the sense of a male, or was he using the word a man in the sense of a person?
Male.
I didn't watch the video. Where was the emphasis? Did he emphasize when a man is talking?
Well, you know, John Lydon has a very interesting cadence, so it's tough to say.
Okay.
He's like, "Oi, come buy me butter."
We really should have had Andrew on this episode just because we're talking about all this UK shit.
Yeah, he's like 8 hours ahead, so it'd be like 5-8.
So he did it that one time.
Well, that's because he was like on vacation or something, or something had happened where he didn't have any like commitments for a week and he could do it.
Right. He went on a punk news podcast bender.
I guess my opinion of this is I kind of think he did mean it as a male, which is kind of lame for him to be talking to women like that. So, I mean, it's lame for him to do that, but people are always looking for a reason to discount John Lydon as an artist. And I think John Lydon is one of the greatest artists in punk rock and roll as a whole. For some reason, it seems that in the past few years or so, people have had this rule where you have to like every aspect of an artist in order to consider their art good, which I think is a flawed rule. John Lydon is John Lydon because he is such a fiery personality. I certainly don't agree with everything that he has to say, but I respect the fact that he says what he actually thinks rather than going along with what he thinks would be the most acceptable thing to say among all people. So I respect that he says his mind rather than being a sheep and going along with the flow.
Rather than.
So I think it's lame that he said this, but I don't think it hurts his image as an artist at all.
Right. And so I agree.
I respect John Lydon as a person. I don't necessarily like him as a person. I don't necessarily like that he said that. But I think John Lydon is a great artist, and that's how he should be viewed as an artist, not as a paragon of morality or niceness, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been a huge fan of the Sex Pistols. I've kind of always viewed them as like meh, like really overrated. I feel like a lot of people got into them more through image of them looking like punk as opposed to actually making good music. But I mean, I've actually listened to some Pill songs and I actually like that more, but I've just always kind of seen Lydon as a bit of a douchebag who will sell anything for any bit amount of money. I mean, the dude was in a goddamn butter commercial.
But like Sex Pistols never came out against materialism or capitalism, really. That wasn't really one of their talking points. So it's not like it was some sort of hypocritical thing.
It doesn't matter, man. If you're punk, you're against it, bro.
Yeah. I like the Sex Pistols. I like Public Image Limited.
Go ahead, Greg. I'm sorry.
Though I can say the only thing I have is Metal Box or whatever they called it when it actually came out on CD. But yeah. I do like it.
I'll say, as I was thinking about this, and would you guys agree that the younger kids that read punk news are not as much in the Sex Pistols as, say, Greg, your and I generation was?
Yeah, most definitely.
So, and I'm like, why is this? When I listen to the Sex Pistols friggin' rock. And I like, but on the other hand, I was thinking like Tommy Dorsey. Like, I don't think Tommy Dorsey's that great, but back in the day, he was the man. He was the Jay-Z of music. And I wonder if, like, is Greg and my generation, like, the last generation of people based in hard rock? And the younger kids are more into, like based in, like, alt-90s rock, so it's not quite as riff-heavy and as acerbic and as, I guess, aggressive sounding. And that's why they're like the Sex Pistols. Am I off base?
I think everyone gets into punk through what's current.
That's not true. I got into
punk. That is not true at all.
Okay. Okay. I got into punk through Rancid and then went backwards. I mean,
get 'em, boys.
He's round back through Green Day and Rancid and then went backwards. So, like, obviously none of us were into Sex Pistols when they were around. But, like, so you're saying, like, okay, I was listening to John. You're saying I was listening to MC Hammer, and then I was like, "Ooh, what's the Sex Pistols thing?" And then that was my first punk band. I don't know where I'm going with this.
To be honest, I feel like more people kind of get into older punk and then just don't go beyond that because, at least in Southern California, there's like all these punks. You know, I'll see at shows, but it's usually like they don't know of any punk bands like past 1989. It's like you guys do realize that there's a couple decades of music that have come out since then, right?
But you mean before then or since then?
Like since then, like since, like, you know, it's like, I feel like they don't realize that punk labels and punk bands, still put out music. It's like all they listen to, and it's not, I'm not dissing these bands because I like them, but it's like they listen to like Adolescence, TSOL, Youth Brigade, and stuff like that. And it's like, that's all there is to punk. Like they're like, oh yeah, after those guys, it all ended.
Well, speaking of new punk rock, Armada, do you have a new punk rock song for us?
I do, actually. It's a very, very new song, and it's actually from, we talked about it earlier, it's from Ohio. It's this band called Boys, which is kind of funny considering the vocalist on the track is not a boy. She is a lady, and the name of the song is Sunday School, but Sunday is spelled like, you know, like ice cream sundae.
Yum.
Well, let's hear this tasty jam.
All right, everybody, let's listen to Boys, their hit single, Sunday School.
I'm tired of being pessimistic, always leaning up against the wall. I tried to call you, but you must have missed it.
And actually, you punk news listeners didn't even know it, but we actually perfectly segued this into our first story. Armando, how is the last song a perfect segue into this current story?
Because the band Boys features Mara of Mixtapes. She wasn't singing on that song, but she was playing on the track.
That's right. People can't even understand how much this podcast is calculated. Every single piece snaps together. There's levels on levels that you can't even see.
We organized this weeks in advance. Before the news even happens, we already knew what to talk about.
Weeks.
Did we debut an Adele track in there too?
Yes. We did.
So the perennial punk news favorite Mixtapes, which I think a lot of people in punk news are a big fan of this band, they're going to be releasing their second album called Even on the Worst Night. No, I'm sorry, that was the first song.
Yeah, that was the second album,
Ordinary Science, on June 25, you know, No Sleep. And to coincide And to coincide with that is going on a month-long tour starting in June 27, going through July 21. It looks like it's going to be covering actually the entire country, more or less. Are you guys psyched for this? Do you guys like Mixtapes?
I thought you were going to say Mixtapes, and I was like, Mick Jagger tapes?
McDonald's tapes?
No, but I'm super excited for Mixtapes. I like them. I like that record. I'm looking forward to this one. And the tour is actually stopping through near my area, so I'm going to go, especially because U Bluett's playing, and I like those guys.
I do know U Bluett, but I'm not too familiar with Mixtapes. I remember checking them out when the... you know, everyone around the site was initially raving about them, and then I kind of forgot about it. But if you tell me I should, Armando, I will listen to them again.
You should, but don't be disappointed by the lack of horns.
Oh.
I'll tell you what's weird is there's a punk rock house at, well, punk rock, that's kind of, sounds kind of cheap. A punk house? What do you call a house where they have shows that are unlicensed? Is that a punk house?
Yeah, it could be a punk house.
I'd call it a house venue. That's what I call it.
Yeah, because it doesn't always have to be punk. What if they only cater to jazz shows on the underground circuit?
That's cool, what I'm going to take Adele. I'm going to say, yo, Adele, I'm going to take you to this jazz house. It's so sweet.
Anyway. Yeah, but don't mind the people that live there. They're a little dirty, and they like to smoke them reefers.
This is so weird. It is, and Brian Yates and I were at this punk house or whatever you want to call it in Philadelphia, and there was a young lady there who I could have sworn was Moira from Mixtape. Like, I was sure it was her. She looked exactly like
Moira. She's an X-Men character, Moira McTaggart.
Is it Mara?
It's Mara.
What is it?
It's Mara.
Mara.
Or at the very least, it's definitely not Moira.
What's your last name?
Weaver.
That's an Irish name. She could be Moira.
But you said Moira. Like
she could be, you know, Moira.
I don't know why you would spell it like that.
The point being is there's a young lady, and I was sure it was her, and it wasn't. So Moira of the Mixtapes has like a clone out in Philadelphia. It is the freakiest thing I've ever seen. It's like something out of like an X-Men episode with like Jean Grey and Dark Phoenix.
That's
my story. The story's a terrible story. So we're going to change topic real quick. Last thing on the Punk News podcast, two nights, is Gaslight Anthem, which used to be perennial Punk News favorites, what people used to rave about. They don't seem to be quite as popular on the Punk News website, not because people don't like them anymore, but just because it seems perhaps some of the flame has petered out. Well, the lead guy, Brian Fallon, or in the Irish accent, Brian Fallon, is releasing a new solo album, and here's what he says to say about a solo album. What I'm working on, I clearly classify as Americana. It's not from New Jersey. It's not from the Gaslight Anthem. In fact, it's not even mine, but it's ours. I'm looking for the people who use folk and country music tradition and took with the past and move forward. Wilco, Ryan Adams, Steve Earle, Guy Clark, The Highwayman, Bob Dylan, etc. I'm not writing about straw hats and gym joints. I'm not writing about nostalgia or a time I wasn't born in. I'm writing about the last 2 years of my life since we wrote Handwritten. So are you guys excited for this?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't – going back to what you said in the intro for this topic, I wouldn't say the flame has petered out too much. I overstated it. Yeah, it's still burning. I just feel it's not as bright, at least to our readers, because it's like they want to hate on stuff that gets popular. You know, it's just it's their nature that, you know, if it's not underground, it's not part of their scene. But either way, I'm super excited for this because, I mean, I love what Brian does. And I feel that this is going to be kind of a concentrated dose, you know, of Fallon. And I'm excited for that.
I'll definitely check it out. But that statement there is just ridiculous.
Oh yeah, well, but that's typical Brian. I feel like that's why I'm excited for it.
Well, because the statement ridiculous? Because I kind of said it like a professional wrestler. See, I don't think
Oh my God, Brian Fallon has broken his guitar in half. I don't think they can bring it back from this one.
Oh man, this podcast is so off the rails. It's like back in the Verducci era. Oh man.
The Verducci era.
Oh, fun times. anyway,
I mean, like Brian Fallon, you know, if you've ever seen his stage banter, he's very silly in that regard, you know, like, and I'm not dissing him because he just likes to put on a show and put on a bit of a character, you know. I mean, it's still himself just at a level 11 as opposed to normally.
I interviewed Brian Fallon actually right before Gaslight Anthem got pretty big. They were kind of big when I interviewed him, but he was a cool guy, man. So, you know. I hope he gets successful. I'm not really into his music that much, but he seems like a nice guy, and he seems to love what he's doing, so all the best wishes for him, you know?
Yeah.
All right. And I think that'll wrap up the Punk News podcast, so stick around, because we're about to play the Melvins covering Venom with Scott Kelly of Neurosis. The jam is called Warhead off Everybody Loves Sausages out at the end of the month. Check it out! that wraps up this week's edition of the Punk News Podcast. As always, baby, as always, the opinions expressed on the Punk News Podcast are the opinions of the sexy gentlemen and sexy ladies making them exclusively. They do not in any way represent the opinions, attitudes, ideas, or general thoughts of punknews.org or anybody affiliated with punknews.org. We want to say thanks to Scotty at Death to False Hope Records for giving us the Fierce James. We want to say thanks to the Melvins, who totally rock. We want to say thanks to the band Boys, and we want to say thanks to the band Infectious Garage Disease. As always, if you want to contact us, if you want to talk to the deities that run this podcast, you can send an email to podcast@punknews.org. So until then, we will see you next week.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, dear God, no.